alcoholic. Good morning. Glad everyone is here. I'm going to probably use my electronic books today, just because sometimes I can search things quickly. But my home group is the Alpharetta Unity Group in Alpharetta, Georgia. We meet every day, Monday to Saturday, at noontime. When I say I'm a home group member, it means I attend the group conscience. I am an active member of that group. So, Carrie, would you introduce yourself?
Carrie Beat from Bend, Oregon. And my home group is New Horizons. We meet 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. Monday through Friday, it's a noon meeting, and on Saturdays, it's a 10:30 meeting so that we can do something with the rest of our day. And every day is a literature-based meeting. My sponsor is Beth M., and she has a sponsor, and I sponsor women who sponsor women.
Thanks. So a couple of things I just want to start out saying. Number one, I don't really care how many people do or don't want to hear about the traditions. And the reason I say that is because I want people to learn and embrace the traditions who are active AA members, who are going to remain active AA members. I don't need to convert every person who comes into every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just don't. Sometimes people say, well, don't you get discouraged? I say, no. No, I do not get discouraged. AA is a revolving door of attendees. Anyone that does not accept that or admit that, either one does not attend AA enough or has not been here long enough. And while I want, and I'm, you know, I say it all the time, I want that door to be as wide as possible. And I want those uncomfortable chairs and bad coffee to be there for everybody who thinks they may have a problem with alcohol. That being said, it is not the revolving door of attendees who keep AA here and preserve it. And I know they went to a hard length to put the three shades up, and I just want to talk quickly about my view, and I'm going to use someone else's description because I like their view better than mine. When it comes to the steps, I don't think you need to mess with the microphone today. We're really going to be fine.
All right.
I promise you. Promise you. All right. I just don't want to distract the audience. We'll be fine. When I look at the steps, the traditions, and the concepts, the version that I've stolen is the steps are our program. The traditions are how we protect our program and preserve it. And the concepts are how we pass our program on. It's very simple to me to keep it that simple about each of the three legacies, that we need to perpetuate our program, and that's what the concepts are there for. The other thing I want to say is that no one is an expert on the traditions. But I just want to add this 2 cents in. In my professional life, we have something that we joke around and call the white lab coat syndrome. And so what that syndrome means is that you could have the smartest people working where you work. And the smartest people have been telling our boss to do something for a long time that we think makes a lot of sense. And our boss doesn't do it. But then all of a sudden, somebody comes in from the outside, some consultant, some new employee, somebody, And they say something, and our boss reacts like they invented fire. And we're like, wait a minute. We've been saying this for 5 years. That's the white lab coat syndrome. And I say that when it comes to the traditions, because it's sometimes it's apparent to me, because I get to see a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that why are speakers about the traditions and the concepts sometimes received better when they're not from the local area? Because we're so harsh on the people in our local area who stand up for AA. And we label them. And then all of a sudden someone comes in from the outside, and then someone's like, oh, well, that's what so-and-so has been saying forever. But because we think they're controlling and trying to take over AA, we don't listen to them. It's the same white lab coat syndrome. And hopefully today we can just share, you know, in a general way, some experience on the traditions. I hope that if you're new to the traditions or to service, and I will cover the 12 traditions later on, I hope that someone has passed the following on to you. And if they haven't, I just will, is that we have great literature in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Best kept secret.
We have great literature, and it's not just the big book in the 12 and 12. AA Comes of Age is so critical when it comes to understanding the traditions, especially because if you like this pamphlet, which I do, The Traditions Illustrated, under Tradition 1, there is a thing there that I love, which basically says there's only one tradition, our unity. And that the other 11 are just very specific ways to preserve our unity. What it doesn't say there is what you have to read in AA Comes of Age, which is basically that for our first give or take 15 years of existence, we did a very bad job of kind of preserving AA. The traditions didn't come into play until 1946. AA was in trouble for sure. I know you can go to a big book workshop and they will tell you that you need the AA that existed in 1939 when that book was printed. And while I love that book, all I can tell you is, read AA Comes of Age. Because AA members were unhinged without a little guidelines like the traditions. So I want to really encourage anyone. Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, pass it on. The service manual and the book that lists all advisory actions of the General Service Conference. And I'll talk about that book a little bit later in the concepts. But that tradition, I haven't gotten a pamphlet yet, but she's reminding me. Because I want to remember one non-AA book, not God. I'm not afraid to mention it. Because it's such a great historical account of early AA with a lot of information that is not found other places. And to me, that book is gold. We have great pamphlets. We've had some put on the seats today. Problems Other Than Alcohol, both versions, the abridged and the regular. The AA group pamphlet, Traditions Illustrated. I personally think that the AA group pamphlet should be sold in every big book. And that's just the way I feel it should come with it. So, Carrie, you want to say something before we go?
Yeah, I do. I'm Carrie. I'm an alcoholic. So actually, this pamphlet does say that what he said. It's the second paragraph on the very first page. This pamphlet is amazing. I call it the Traditions for Dummies. When I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was telling these ladies a little earlier, You know, I couldn't read. I mean, the only book I had ever read was Ramona the Great, and I only read half of it, and it was in third grade, according to my mom. So I needed something that looked like the cartoon version of the traditions when I was new, and so that was this is really, really a cool pamphlet, and it does say a lot of what he just said. I've also heard, you know, and I'll admit that I've stolen this from somebody else too. So his version of the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts. Some of you guys may have heard this because, again, it's not original. But the 12 steps are to save us from suicide. The 12 traditions are to keep us from homicide. And the 12 concepts of World Services keep us from genocide. And so that's easy for me to remember. I was at annual International Women's Conference or something like that, and we had the wonderful speaker, the main speaker. The main speaker talked for an hour. She got an hour long to talk, and there was this clock that's counting down up here. I don't think that's for our time, but there was a big clock because it was like in a stadium, and it was counting down, and you could tell that she only had 3 minutes left of her talk, and she had just made everybody for the past hour cry and laugh, and she had just the most beautiful story, and she had just the most, I mean, heartbreaking and funny and everything. And then she says, 3 minutes remaining, and she says, now I'll tell you what's important. And it's like, oh my God, after all that, like, she's like, now I'm going to say something that is important, and you haven't heard anything that I've said today, that's fine, it's just my story. Here's my experience. And she says, the 12 steps helped me to clean up the wreckage of my past. The 12 traditions help to ensure that this present moment, I have a seat in the rooms and nobody can keep me out. And the 12 concepts of World Services help to preserve our future of the Alcoholics Anonymous. So there's past, present, and future. And then she said, you know, I want to see everybody who is comfortable, would be comfortable getting up here and telling, giving a talk on the 12 steps. Raise your hand. Like 80% of the room, you know, raised their hand. And she said, okay, about 80%. That's what I normally get. She's like, how about the 12 traditions? Who would be comfortable getting up here and talking about the 12 traditions? About 30% of the room. Then she says, about 30%, that's what I usually get. She goes, how about the 12 concepts? And so the 4%ers is what she called them, were raising their hand. And she said, now keep your hand up. And she said, keep your hand up for a minute. She goes, everybody else without their hands up, ask one of the people with their hands up to be your service sponsor and to take you through those 12 concepts. And that's what really opened my eyes to a lot of the stuff that he was just talking about. Also on Comes of Age, again, I was just telling these ladies, like, I don't read, I'm not a reader, but I have an ego, you know, and I was at my home group a long time ago. There was an old timer there who shared, and I had just finished going through the traditions, right, in my Traditions for Blondes book, and he says, and I had my 12 and 12, and he said, if anybody thinks that they've been through the 12 traditions but have never read Comes of Age, it's like saying you've been through the 12 steps but have never read the big book. Like, so that's kind of what got me into Comes of Age, and that day I got a group together of the women that I sponsor and the women that they sponsor and my sponsor, and we spent the next 2 years of every Tuesday at a book study going through Comes of Age at my house, and that's how we did it.
So I just want to say that I think sometimes if you took 100 random AA members and you just asked them the following question, what's the best thing about AA? Or what's the most cherished quality about AA? My experience with asking members that, especially new people who maybe I meet, is they always talk about the life-saving program in the big book. Our ability to arrest alcoholism, to provide somebody with a solution. The problem is, that's not what our literature says. Our literature is very clear that the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous is the most cherished quality our society has, period. It puts it before recovery. It's the first sentence of the first tradition of the 12 and 12. of how important that unity is. And I always say when it comes to Tradition One, I'm not in a numbers game. I'm not worried about Alcoholics Anonymous having 3 million people in 2 years. That does not... My concern, or what I would like to work towards or help, is that any time someone believes they have a drinking problem, that they can come in to Alcoholics Anonymous and find Alcoholics Anonymous. I am not anti-treatment. I am not anti-celebrate recovery. I'm not anti-therapist, anti-counselor, any of that. I just believe in the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I want new people who come to AA to find AA. That's what I want to be here. And the tradition, the first tradition, which maybe we should have the long form available in case anyone...
long form is in the back of this pamphlet.
The AA group pamphlet. I'll read Tradition 1 long form. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. AA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows close afterward.
Can I use that service manual that's sitting by you for just a second? Billy just read the... Thank you so much. Billy just read the first line of the first tradition in the 12 and 12, and I just... It's so beautiful, that whole paragraph. He doesn't like me to read. He said people don't like to be read to, so I won't read to you too much today. But the first paragraph is so beautiful, and I just wanted to finish. So he started out by saying, the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous is the most cherished quality our society has. Now it continues to say, our lives and the lives of all to come depend squarely upon it. We stay whole or AA dies. Without unity, the heart of AA would cease to beat. Our world arteries would no longer carry the life-giving grace of God. His gift to us would be spent aimlessly. Back again in their caves, alcoholics would reproach us and say, what a great thing AA might have been. That's why no personal sacrifice is too great for preservation of the fellowship, and no one person comes before the group. Now, when I first recovered through the 12 steps, you know, I was on a pink cloud. I wanted to go and save the world, right? I wanted to, and we'll talk about that a little bit when we get into Traditions 3 and 5, but I wanted to take everybody through the steps. I don't care if you're alcoholic or not, if you're a drug addict, overeater, bulimic, whatever, let's go, you know? And what I've been referring to as legacy skipping, I've seen happen in my area to where you get on this huge pink cloud and you're rocketed into the fourth dimension right over the second legacy, and you're in the third legacy going and carrying the message. And without that second legacy, which I believe comes second for a reason, the 12 traditions, before service, you know, because this, I'm going to read you something out of the service manual, and it's the part that's not so dry. It's on page 20. Beautiful. We may not need AA general service, we may not need general service conference to ensure our own recovery. True. Once you recover through the steps, as long as you're helping everybody else, alcoholics, I've learned, then you could stay sober without that third legacy. However, we do need it to ensure the recovery of the alcoholic who still stumbles in the darkness one short block from this room. We need it to ensure the recovery of a child being born tonight destined for alcoholism. We need it to provide, in keeping with our 12th step, a permanent haven for all alcoholics who in the ages ahead can find in AA that rebirth that has brought us all back to life. We need it because more than all others are conscious of the devastating effects of the human urge for power and prestige, which we must ensure that can never evade AA. We need it to ensure AA against government while insulating it against anarchy. We need it to protect AA against disintegration while preventing over in... Help me. Over...
Integration.
We need it so that Alcoholics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous alone is the ultimate repository of its 12 steps and its 12 traditions and of all of its services. We need it to ensure that changes within AA come only as a response and the needs and the wants of all AA and not any few. We need it to ensure that the doors in the halls of AA never have locks on them so that all people for all time who have an alcoholic problem may enter the halls unasked and feel welcome. We need it to ensure that Alcoholics Anonymous never asks of anyone who needs us what his race is, his or her creed is, what his or her social position is. And so when I heard that, you know, again, I was rocketed into the fourth dimension right over the second legacy, because who needs rules, right? That's what I thought the traditions were. And thank you for letting me use your service manual. And so that's, you know, the issue I see with that, in my area at least, is I see a lot of really busy people out there carrying the message. When you're carrying the message outside of those guidelines, it makes for a hell of a lot more work for us three legacy members to go behind you and clean up all of your helpfulness. And so without those 12 traditions to keep us in line, it's really hard to get back into line.
So one of the things I always mention is that the difficulty with the traditions or any problems that we have in AA, it is very easy for people to blame it on the treatment center, on the van that pulls up. I think one of the reasons, you know, I'm not afraid, that's not our problem. It's absolutely not our problem. Our problem is circuit speakers who have no knowledge or experience in the traditions, who are saying things in front of hundreds of people, and those tapes are getting sent all over that have crap on them, that are garbage. But because everyone's afraid to say something about it, because of their status in AA, and then the Big Book movement. I love the Big Book, and we talk about the renaissance of Joe and Charlie, which is awesome. But no movement has done more damage to the AA traditions than the extreme, dogmatic, militant Big Book enthusiasts circa early 1990s and heading forward, because they say things that can't be reconciled with the 12 traditions. Is what she just read is nice, but it's not a tradition. The long form of the tradition actually goes further than why we need a conference. It says A must continue to live, or most of us, that word of the use, us, is not people already in AA. Most of us, meaning people already here in the tent, most of us will already die. You go to some Big Book workshops and they want to tell you, just get your Big Book, you can be in a foxhole, you can be as a missionary, of course, it works. But that's not the suggested way. The suggested way to stay sober is to have unity. And I just want to stress that again. Most of us will surely die. Us meaning people already in Alcoholics Anonymous. That without our unity, it doesn't matter how much of an expert we are in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Most of us will surely die.
So an example of what I've heard said, and Billy has heard it probably even more than me from the podium, said by some speakers that are not exactly in alignment, that sounds nice and it sounds clever, are things such as alcohol in pill or powder form. So alcohol comes in liquid form, just in case, I mean, I don't know if anybody has looked it up in the dictionary. There's actually a list of what forms of alcohol in conference-approved literature. I can't find it at this moment. But it talks about hard liquor, liqueurs, beer, wine. It gives a whole list of in any form at all. because there's a lot of loopholes that I have actually, when I got sober, I dedicated 2 years of my early sobriety to finding all the loopholes and using them. but alcohol comes in liquid form, just in case anybody doesn't realize that. And that's the only form it comes in.
So I'll pass it to Carrie to give final thoughts on tradition one, but I just want to say, it is true. You can't get kicked out of AA. We have no membership card. We have no special secret handshake. Anybody can say they're a member. But you can get kicked out of an AA meeting. You can get kicked out of an AA group. If your behavior or conduct interferes with other people getting sober, then the overall good of everybody is more important than any individual. Now, sometimes we always want to talk about, we're extremists in AA, if you haven't caught on yet. We always go to the worst examples, good or bad. So we always talk about the worst person's behavior, but that's not the worst person's behavior. Those are the rare occurrences. The more occurrences that interfere, especially with like a church like this, is when somebody reads something like, you can't lock your bike to the front gate of the church, but there's someone who's been coming to that meeting for 11 years who feels that's for everybody else but them. Or anything else like that where you meet has certain rules and somebody thinks they're for everybody else but them. And if you really embrace tradition one, and I always say embrace because I don't believe enforcement works. I think, like Carrie described, the traditions are like the big book. If you've been in and out of AA for a long time and it never worked, finally, you usually give in and you go to somebody that you've hated for a long time in AA. And you finally concede that whatever they're doing seems to be better than what you're doing. And you ask them, what do you do? And they tell you that they go through the big book and that's how they stay sober. Same thing with the traditions. You can enforce it, yell about it, everything you want. That's why I talk about speakers and other people setting the wrong example. It's your example that has to speak the loudest when it comes to the AA traditions. They're not always easy to embrace because our egos get in the way, but it's the best form of taking people through the traditions is respecting those traditions.
Because I'm a pamphlet pusher, I'm just going to tell you right now. And so I won't read to you this whole pamphlet because I understand that you can read. But I'll read little pieces of it to get you interested. And one of the things in tradition one in this pamphlet, on the second page, well, actually, I'll back up to the first page. The highlighted portion that I really like is at the bottom where it says, they are to the group, talking about the traditions and what Bill said, that they are to the group survival, what AA's 12 steps are to each member's sobriety and peace of mind. Most individuals cannot recover unless there's a group, and the group must survive or the individual will not. Now, moving on to the first tradition. So everybody has their mascot in their meeting, right? The guy that can't get sober. He's always disruptive. Everybody has that guy. Everybody knows who I'm talking about. So this pamphlet, when Billy is talking about how you can't get kicked out of AA, and this is a tricky one because I didn't understand this for a long time. I thought, so we had this really disruptive guy. Unfortunately, he's passed now. But we had this really disruptive guy in my first home group that he broke a window, he'd throw chairs, he kicked a dent in the door. I mean, you know, he was very, he was causing people to not come back. And our group was getting smaller and smaller because they were in fear. This guy had temper tantrums. And my group took a group conscience, and we asked him to take 90 days and to maybe work with a sponsor, or it's true, some people said that we kicked him out of our group for 90 days. And I was belligerent. Third tradition, you can't kick anybody out. You know, I showed up to my home group business meeting just defending this guy. I didn't understand that, like what Billy was talking about, you can't get kicked out of AA. You can get kicked out of a group. And so the first paragraph of this, our brother, the noisy drunk, affords us the simplest illustration of this tradition. If he insists on disrupting the meeting, we invite him to leave, and we bring him back when he's in better shape to hear the message. We're putting the common welfare first. But isn't it in his welfare, too, if he's ever going to get sober? The group must go on functioning, ready for him. So now, ever since I learned that lesson, every time I have, and this is my one tradition, one example that I'll give you, every time I have a struggle within self as far as how to vote in an AA business meeting, I always now, I didn't used to do this, I always now have to ask myself, am I putting one individual before the group? What is the best for the group? So the home group that I have today, New Horizons, we have a 90-day sobriety requirement for our secretary. It wasn't always like that. When I was new, newcomer Carrie thought that it would be, I would show up to the meetings and pitch a fit until I got what I wanted. I got the traditions taken out of, we didn't read the traditions for a long time. I mean, this is what I'm talking about, jumping right over the second legacy into the third. Nobody wants to hear about the traditions, that's, you know. And so, but I was, unfortunately, I was already sponsoring people, and I thought that it could keep them sober to be a secretary. You know, and so I wasn't looking at what was best for the group. I was looking at what was best for the individual. Today, I'm not very popular when, let's say, two people are standing for secretary. One of them has 30 years of sobriety. They don't need the secretary position. They've been a secretary. It's not going to do anything for them. Nobody likes them anyway because they enforce the group conscience and they follow the script or whatever. And then there's a newcomer who needs that position to stay sober. And nobody understands today why I vote the way I do. Because for years I voted for whoever needed the position. But now I have to put the group before the one individual. And after enough time of, after I got the sobriety requirement in my home group taken down to 3 months instead of the 9-month sobriety requirement that was there when I first got there, it's a 6-day-a-week meeting. And so we have 90-day sober secretaries with the key to the door. And it's often that one of them gets drunk or one of them doesn't show up. And it's affecting all of the other newcomers who can't get to a meeting that day. So me putting that one individual, whether they're a newcomer, long-winded old timer, after the timer goes off, you don't want to, you know, tell the old timer to wrap it up. Well, that's putting personalities before principle. Or the first tradition, the group has to come before me, the group has to come before you, the group has to come before him, her, they have to come before any one individual. And that's a lesson that was hard for me to learn.
Thanks. So I just want to read the long form of tradition 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. So one of the things I can tell you is that there's a lot of urban myths in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're destroying us a little at a time. Because people take the freedom that's guaranteed in our traditions and want to kind of twist and turn what our literature says. That, what I just read, and again, I'll refer to AA Comes of Age. I believe that the group always knows better. I believe that in my heart. But that depends on how do I define the group. There are a lot of people in AA who have redefined the group that anyone who happens to sit in my meeting one time is a voting member. I don't know where that comes from. A group conscience is a group conscience. It's not a conscience of everyone that happens to be attending the meeting that day. But that's what has happened is, you know, I tell people all the time, make sure if your group is, you know, we have way too many meetings and not enough groups in Alcoholics Anonymous. That, in my opinion, may be our biggest problem. But if you go to, now I haven't started a new meeting in a long time, but my home group in New Jersey, if you go to that home group, you will see that you have to be registered as a member of that group for one prior business meeting in order to vote. That's our group conscience. If you want to change something significant in our meeting group format, you're not allowed to just bring it up at a business meeting. You have to submit it to the group secretary, and it has to be read for a whole month that that's on the agenda of our group conscience so that everybody knows what's going on. But somehow or another, this very simple, great statement of, for our group purpose, there is one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience, gets twisted to be, well, we'll just have a quick vote, or anyone who shows up. Like, I do believe in the group conscience. And I sometimes think we run into difficult situations at certain meetings, again, when certain members think they're better than the group conscience. I think the greatest growing lesson for me ever in AA, if I look back, is in all of the time I've been in AA service, what has helped me grow the most? Like, what from service is it that I became an expert in using Word and Word Perfect and Excel? Is that what has really benefited my life the most from service? No. What has benefited me the most is knowing that the group always knows better. That I have to carry out the group conscience. Now, that doesn't mean I always like it. And I actually think it's harder to carry out a group conscience when it goes against what I was for. It doesn't believe that I don't believe in the minority appeal. But I truly believe that is for a small part of what we vote on. But I do think that there's a lot of anarchy around this group conscience thing, and that's what's torn down some of our groups, is that group members are not voting for group conscience. It's everybody who shows up.
I'm so glad he just gave me the mic. Because ditto, I mean, everything he just said. And again, I'm not gonna pretend I'm not gonna push some pamphlets here on you, because this group pamphlet here has a description on what is an informed group conscience. That's on page 28. And anybody who wants one of my pre-highlighted ones is welcome to come and get them, because those have some really good highlights in them. And I'm just going to read a couple of lines. I won't read you the whole what is an informed group conscience, but I'm going to read a couple of pertinent lines that stand out to me. Again, this is on page 28 and 29 of your AA group pamphlet. This is achieved. Oh, so what is an informed group conscience? This is achieved by the group members through the sharing of full information. On sensitive issues, the group works slowly, kind of like what Billy was just saying about how it has to go on the agenda. Everybody has to hear about it. That's how an informed group conscience opposed to. So a friend of mine, Jeff O., he shared what with me, and I love using this, and I had to write it down because I always forget it. What is the opposite of an informed group conscience? He calls an ignorant majority. And that's that. Oh, everybody on the spot, can we open the meeting instead of having our regular closed meeting, because we have a, you know, everybody who doesn't mind opening the meeting for this, you know, mom with a kid, raise your hand, and everybody takes an ignorant majority conscience instead of an informed group conscience, which has to go through the process. And then it continues to say, its voice is heard when a well-informed group arrives at a decision. The term informed group conscience implies that pertinent information has been studied and all views have been heard before the group votes. And so I really like the illustration in the in this your 12 Traditions Illustrated. There's a picture of me. I actually put blonde hair on this guy and a dress so that it looks a little bit more like me. But there's a picture of me in this illustration on the second tradition in here. And there's my business meeting down there, and they're all sitting there at my home group. And then there's me standing up, knowing that I'm right. And knowing that I have the right answer. And then there's God, the group conscience, rising up out of this group, and he's saying, down, girl, I got this. You can sit down. You have one vote. You're one among many. And I have to remember that because I am this guy. Well, this girl in a dress with blonde hair. I am that. And I'll give you a quick example of something that really... I said that I am back with my original home group. I did leave that group for 3 years, and I was a member of a different group during that 3 years. So before I left New Horizons, we were having some, what you've probably heard referred to as 13-step issues. We had some predatorial behavior going on, and I knew how to fix it. I presented my motion. I went through the whole, you know, here's my motion. We announced it for a month. We did the whole, everybody got to research. And the group was wrong. The group voted, and what I knew to be right didn't happen. And I couldn't believe that, because I knew how to fix it. You know, but God, as he may express himself through the rest of my group, had other plans, I guess, which I didn't see. And everything is 2020 in hindsight, and I understand that. Well, today, as I look back, so 3 years go by, 2.5 years go by, and after I left that group and I was a member of a different group, that 13-step issue that I could have fixed in that little one situation with a Band-Aid began to get huge. And the whole group started really... there was multiple 13-step issues going on, or predatorial behavior and stuff. And it got so bad that the group, like the drunk, who may need to reach a bottom without me saving it, ended up reaching a bottom. And it resulted, me being out of their hair, me being out of the way so that God can do his will without Carrie interfering, allowed that group to get so bad off that women were not showing up there anymore, but it resulted in a really productive AA safety and AA workshop that pretty much half the town attended, and we learned so much from that. A safety plan in the group, and today that group is predominantly women. It's one of the strongest groups in Central Oregon, definitely the strongest women AA, and all of that wouldn't have happened if I would have fixed that little problem right then and there. So God had other plans, and so it turns out, you know, even when I was right, I was wrong. And so today I have to accept the group conscience. I didn't, you know, I ended up leaving the group, which I see as God getting me out of the way so that he could finish doing his will. So we have a timer, too, in the group for 3-minute timer. And then once the timer goes off, because it's sharing, well, we have 6 different secretaries and a backup secretary, because we have 6 different secretaries with 90-day sobriety requirements. So, of course, we have to have a backup secretary. And so what we have is the timer, and a lot of people, a lot of secretaries, they aren't comfortable with the timer. So I was sponsoring this woman who said, well, you know, it's a small meeting on Fridays because it's the 12 and 12 study. So I don't think I need the timer on this meeting. And I'm like, oh, you're probably right. And she goes, really? And I go, yeah, you're probably right. God doesn't know what he's talking about sometimes. And she goes, what do you mean? And I said, well, I mean, you know what the group conscience is. God, as he expresses himself, you know, through the group conscience. And so when you're not using the timer, that just means that you're saying, I hear you, God. I know what you want, but I have a better idea. I'm going to do it my way. And me telling her that resonates in my head every time I'm at a committee meeting, when I think I know better every time. So I have to, I kind of have to teach myself that same lesson. So as far as Billy was talking about the groups versus the meetings, and I'll just say this real quick. I agree that that could be the biggest problem in Alcoholics Anonymous today, is the coffee pot and the resentment meeting. I know that we glorify the coffee pot and the resentment, and we say, oh, well, thank goodness for the coffee pot and the resentment because we have so many meetings. No, that's why we have so many meetings and not enough groups. Orphan meetings is what I call them. And if you look at it, if you take and you uncover, discover, and discard, you know, if we do some inventory work on this, you go back 30 years and you look at numbers. And I'm not saying we need to have a bunch of people in AA. I think it's more about quality and effectiveness rather than how many people we have here, for sure. But having said that, people are running around Chicken Little, people who are saying, oh, AA is flatlined, AA is, you know, declining in membership and all that. Now, I don't believe that. This is what I believe. I believe 30 years ago, if you look at the numbers of groups that we had, the amount of AA groups, it was about half of what we have today. But the members were, the groups were three times the size, right? So there was tons more members in each one of these groups. Well, today we have twice as many groups as we did that back then, but hardly any members in each group. And the reason I believe that that happened is because instead of 30 years ago, when you belonged to a group and there was no coffee pot and resentment meeting, we worked through our problems and our differences and the controversies in our group by utilizing these 12 traditions and the 12 concepts at group level. Instead of F everything and run with a coffee pot and a resentment, we actually faced everything and we recovered as a group. And so now, today, in drive-through AA society, really, drive-through AA, a lot of people just like to go to the meeting and get out of there. It's easier, rather than utilizing these traditions and concepts to work through our issues and face everything and recover in our groups, to just take a coffee pot and our resentment and go start another meeting. Well, most of these meetings only ever end up a meeting. They never, and even if you get a GSR, most of the meetings are still so small that they fold anyways after a year or so. And so how do you know how many people are in AA? I don't know. A lot of people think that they belong to a group, but there's no GSR. There's no, how do you know how many people are out there who belong to just an orphan meeting who aren't being counted because they don't belong to a group anymore? So a little bit of inventory can tell a lot.
Thanks. So let me read the long form of Tradition 3. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism, hence we may refuse none who wish to recover, nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. I want to take that line by line, because I think it's very important, especially as we discuss this tradition and then five in a little bit, that this tradition never had anything to do with alcohol or drugs. Even though you go to any talk on these and everyone wants to give you their opinion on what Bill meant in relation to alcohol or other things. So I'm going to go back again to my big book friends, because if you look, I can't help but notice real trends in Alcoholics Anonymous. When more and more people work in the recovery business and don't separate that from their AA life, like I want them to have a job, but I don't need them to bring their job into AA. And unfortunately, the amount of speakers today who are employed in the recovery or recovery-affiliated businesses is through the roof. So I want to define for you, because has most people here been to some kind of big book workshop or retreat or conference? Has everyone here heard that Bill used words for a specific reason? Have you heard that before? And that he didn't like to use the same words twice? and that you should use a dictionary when you're going through the big book to make sure you're getting the dictionary definition and not the one that I make up in my crazy head? All right. So we're all on the same page. So let's take that first line. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. I have heard people in AA redefine alcoholism more and more. But I'm going to go to the dictionary, like those big book retreats tell me to do. Continued excessive or compulsive use of alcoholic drinks. Just want to say that again. Continued excessive or compulsive use of alcoholic drinks. A chronic, progressive, potentially fatal disorder marked by excessive and usually compulsive drinking of alcohol, leading to psychological and physical dependence. That's what alcoholism is. There is no such thing as being an emotional alcoholic. That's just called being a normal person who doesn't have the allergy and the mental obsession. Okay? I mean, that's what that is. But we have redefined this. I don't know if there's a lot of people here, what you heard, but one of the things that drives me crazy around the holiday season, and I'm not one of those lunatics who think every day is the same day. I know that Christmas is a catastrophe for most new people who haven't been through the steps. I know that's a rougher time of the year. But what drives me crazy is the following. When I have to hear someone with 20 years in my meeting say that their father-in-law came over during the holidays, and their father-in-law, although he's not a drinker, he has all the kind of nuances of an alcoholic, that he's a dry drunk. And I'm like, no. He's a normal person having a bad day who doesn't have the allergy of mental obsession. We have redefined alcoholism. And again, our version of alcoholism is that we don't care how much you drink, what happens to your drink. We care what happens to your body when you drink. Do you have to keep drinking? And then it says, nor AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. This is where Bill was so far ahead of us. The first line is what Bill is setting in stone. Our membership is for people who suffer from alcoholism, period. You might have a million other problems, we don't care. None of them have anything to do with your membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. Then he says, nor a membership ever depend upon money or conformity, because Bill knew race issues in 1935, 1945, this country was very different. Sexuality issues. Today, it's political issues. Today we've flip-flopped. But basically what Bill has said here is that if you have alcoholism, you are guaranteed a seat in an AA meeting. We don't care what color you are. We don't care what religion you are. We don't care what your sexuality is. We don't care what you do for a living. We don't care who you vote for. The only thing that matters is that you have alcoholism. And that's sometimes where I think we've gone down a very bad path as far as redefining alcoholism. And people saying, I hear people now. I've heard delegates who say that they believe alcoholism is an illness that is possible to have without ever drinking. And again, and this is a delegate who says it on tape that says this was passed on to him from a trustee. Don't worry if you never drank. You suffer from alcoholism, your spiritual illness. And I'm like, no, you're just spiritually ill. Or you're a person having a bad day. And I'll pass it over to Carrie. But again, I just want to, because I believe that we have to use not our definition, but the real definition of alcoholism. Continued excessive or compulsive use of alcoholic drinks. A chronic, progressive, potentially fatal disorder marked by excessive and usually compulsive drinking. The dictionary does not say people who tend to act bad, who never really drank, but have the emotional characteristics of an alcoholic. That's not how it defines alcoholism. You have to have drank and you have to have the allergy.
So the A, B, and C's that we read in How It Works. Here we go. Okay. So right above the ABCs. Thank you. Sorry. Okay. So our description of the alcoholic. He just read the dictionary's description. I am more of a big book thumper, I guess. and I believe that we have a description of the alcoholic in the big book. And it says here, our description of the alcoholic, which is the doctor's opinion, the chapter to the agnostic, which is step two, and then our personal adventures before and after, which is the stories in the back of the book, make three pertinent ideas. I believe that we did make clear. I believe Silkworth made clear. So in Doctor's Opinion, it tells all these different types of alcoholics. And then it says here at the bottom, it says all of these and many others have one symptom in common. Not road rage, not egomaniac with an inferiority complex, not any of that stuff that I hear that actually my best friend who is not an alcoholic has the worst road rage in the world. And I've never had a case. And I can guarantee you I'm an alcoholic. I have an allergic reaction to alcohol. So it says all of these different types of alcoholics have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving, which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. So I think that that description is good enough for me.
Got to say something. I did not say, so sometimes I know that people in AA don't hear, they want to hear what they think the speaker said. I did not say that our big book definition, or she claiming to be a bigger big book thumper than me. What I said was, for what she didn't listen to, was that at many big book retreats, people tell people to go to the dictionary. But it seems they're selective on what they tell them to look up. And I'm saying, let's just be fair across the whole board. You can't tell people, look up this word, but don't look up alcoholism. Because I want you to look up these words, but I'm going to tell you, you can be an alcoholic without ever drinking. That's what I was saying.
I apologize. Totally. And I go to the 1935. At my home group, we have a big book study on every Wednesday, and we have a 1932 dictionary, and we look it up. You know, and then you can even get, so the big book has a definition, obviously, an allergy to alcohol. So we actually look up the word allergy, an abnormal reaction to a food or substance. Well, my abnormal reaction to alcohol is, you know, a normal person, they might come home and go, oh, I've had a hard day, I need a beer. And they might have a beer and get what they need and get relaxed and then have some dinner and maybe brush their teeth and go to bed. And then some of them even wake up and go to work the next day. My abnormal reaction to alcohol, my allergy, is I get home from work, I have a hard day, I need a beer, I drink a beer, and it is on. And there's no off switch. And I do not go to work the next day. And so, yes, I do utilize the dictionary. I love Dr. Silkworth's description of the alcoholic. And so I appreciate that no matter who you are, Tradition 3 guarantees you a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous if you have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Like, absolutely, you're guaranteed. It doesn't matter if you are a rapist, a drug addict, a child molester, a Republican, a Democrat, black, white, gay, straight, anybody who has an abnormal reaction to alcohol, who is an alcoholic, when they say they are, has a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. For me, this is Tradition 2-3, 2 and 3, the difference between an open and a closed meeting. It says here, open meetings, and this is on the myths and misconceptions. I don't know if anybody's heard Billy's talk on myths and misconceptions. It's amazing, and if you haven't heard it, I will send you an MP3, sign up on this clipboard, and I will send that to you. One of the myths and misconceptions are, what is an open meeting? A meeting of All Addictions Anonymous, right? No, it's actually still an AA meeting. I know this might shock some people, but it still has a primary purpose. And we'll get to that in Tradition 5, and I'll read a primary purpose statement. But at this time, I'm going to read the definition of an open meeting. Open meetings are available to anyone interested in Alcoholics Anonymous program of recovery from alcoholism. Non-alcoholics, people without alcoholism, may attend open meetings as observers. And I love it when Billy says, I don't know about you, but I like to look words up, and I go to the dictionary and I've looked up the word observer, and it does not say participant. So I will also just really quickly read one little line out of the third tradition illustrated, which I think is all that needs to be said about Tradition 3. I think it could just say it, and that could be the only words on this page. All alcoholics are welcome. It's a pretty good sentence.
I sometimes will say things when I speak, observations I've made over a long time, and there's many people who will question me and say, you're wrong. And so one of the observations I made, where some people have said I was wrong, was that I moved a couple of years ago. And I noticed some things that I hadn't noticed before. And maybe it was because my old home group, everyone knew who I was. It's a lot different when you show up in a new community and all of a sudden you're anonymous. I know there are some people in my old home group that probably didn't talk to me because they didn't like me. That's fine. But I started talking to a lot of young guys at this particular clubhouse. In fact, she disagreed with me because the line in closed meetings in the AA group pamphlet says, closed meetings are for AA members or those who have a drinking problem and a desire to stop drinking. And I noticed two things when I was talking to new people, new guys. One is I would ask them, what's their home group? And they would tell me, oh, the Thursday night meeting at the house. And I would be like, what's the Thursday night meeting at the house? And they'd be like, oh, the recovery house I live at. And I would be like, well, that's nice, and I'm glad the recovery house you're at has a meeting, but that's not your home group. So many people in AA today think they have a home group and really don't. So many people claim a home group that's really a meeting, or a clubhouse, or a halfway house. The other thing is when somebody says to me, I'm going to the Friday night meeting, and I say to them, isn't that the closed meeting? I thought you told me you didn't drink. And they say, oh, don't worry about that. Dave told me, if they ask me that, to just say I have a desire to stop drinking. Dave then clearly hasn't read this. Because a desire to stop drinking is not good enough to go to a closed meeting. It says, AA members or those who have a drinking problem and a desire to stop drinking. You can't just say, I have all these other problems, but I have a desire to stop drinking. One of those problems has to be a drinking problem. But it's become so convoluted out there. It's just incredible.
Yes, I did disagree with him about that. So thank goodness that we have the literature, because I'll tell you what, when I first got my hands on this pamphlet, the AA group pamphlet, and this has something to do with the second tradition as it relates to AA as a whole instead of the groups. When I first got my hands on this AA group pamphlet, I will tell you, it was 95% wrong. And only a couple of things in here were right, and according to Carrie. And today, after making many mistakes, having a little bit of experience, knowing the traditions helps a little bit, I'll tell you, this pamphlet is 95% right. There's only one thing in it that's wrong. And the pamphlet hasn't changed. So what I've been taught is, even when I know I'm right, I have to look it up in our conference-approved literature, because this is, and I have to go with whatever it says. And why? Is because God, as he may express himself through the entire group conscience of the entire United States and Canada, expressed and written through in our conference-approved literature, holds a tiny bit more weight than Carrie's opinion. So I go with whatever our literature says now, instead of my opinion. So I won't tell you where it's wrong in here, because that's not God, you know. God is right, Carrie's wrong. So I did think that a closed meeting, and I still kind of think that when I personally am in a closed meeting, which we don't have in Central Oregon, they're pretty much all open meetings, but when I'm personally in a closed meeting, I allow my behavior to be a little bit different. I will say my last name. I will talk about some outside issues, if you know, and so I think a closed meeting is where one would go, I thought, who maybe isn't sure if they're alcoholic because they don't know if they want to be a member yet, so they need their anonymity protected. Whereas in an open meeting, we are on display. And I don't know if anybody has read in the 12 and 12 in tradition 12, where it talks about why an open meeting was created. And an open meeting was, you know, after Al-Anon family groups started, 12 years after the Big Book was written, all of the meetings there was no open and closed meetings. They were all pretty much closed because Al-Anon had their own fellowship, right? Well, only alcoholics were welcome. But then they decided, in the 12 and 12, it talks about, well, then we decided that they wanted to open some meetings to interested friends and to professionals so that they could see what AA was all about. So interested, consequently, many groups began to hold meetings which are open to interested friends and to the public so that the average citizen could see for himself just what AA was all about, page 186 of your 12 and 12. And so an open meeting is where I'm on display, because there might be counselors or members of the clergy or medical society or whoever looking to see if they really want to send their family member or their client or their patient or whatever to AA. So I try to refrain from using foul language more so in an open meeting where I'm on display than in a closed meeting. Stick to primary purpose. You know, I don't want to give the impression that Alcoholics Anonymous is for other issues. I don't say my last name because it's public. And so in an open meeting, I'm much more well behaved, I guess, than a closed meeting.
Thanks. So, tradition 4, I will read the long form. With respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. Now, I'll tell you this. As someone who's been a trustee for 4 years, you get a lot of mail every week. And what I never received in those 4 years was anybody ever writing from the group saying that they were taking a suggestion in Tradition 4 and they were about to do something and they wanted to run it by the trustees. So
I've written that letter, actually. I've done that.
But I want to go back to the first line because it's so important. With respect to its own affairs. And again, just so I'm not making up my own definition, that adjective pronoun, own, used with a possessive to emphasize that something or someone belongs. So, when we're talking about its own affairs, let's talk about what an AA group does not own. It does not own the 12 steps. It does not own the 12 traditions. It does not own the 12 concepts. It does not own any of that. Those belong to the collective whole of Alcoholics Anonymous. No AA group has any authority unless they're carrying it out per concepts 1 and 2 with all the other AA groups. But an individual AA group, it says, with respect to its own affairs. And I always say, if you like cakes, that's awesome. Last night I was at a meeting in St. Louis where they actually put the names on the cakes. That's awesome. It's a nice custom. Some groups like to have big involved anniversary celebrations where a special speaker comes in, and that's great. Some groups like cupcakes. Some groups like tea. But those are customs. And when it says, but when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups, those groups ought to be consulted, and no action ought to be taken that might greatly affect AA as a whole, I will tell you that if you're going to take an action that breaks another tradition, you are affecting AA as a whole. And people will sometimes ask me, give me an example of that. I'll give you an example. You have a duty to present AA to newcomers. If a newcomer sees you break a tradition because you say you can with tradition 4, that's all they're going to remember in every other meeting they go to. It will affect AA as a whole. I always joke around that as soon as you hear in a business meeting somebody mention tradition 4, it means in the next sentence a whole bunch of other traditions are about to get completely thrown out the window. Because it was never meant to apply to traditions.
And they only read half of the small form.
Of course. It was only meant to apply to customs. This autonomy thing, we've had groups redefine alcoholism, redefine membership, say it's okay to do certain things that clearly go against our traditions, take money from outside entities. All of these things affect AA as a whole.
Yeah, and I don't have too much to add to that other than, of course, reading a little bit out of this. But newcomers of today, who are the newcomers of today? Well, they're the old-timers of tomorrow. And when we're teaching that tradition 4 trumps all of the other traditions, then what we're really teaching is that we only need that one tradition, and we throw them all out the window. And that's not what I'm... And the reason that I'm passionate about the traditions today, which I wasn't always, I sat in meetings for the first 18 months probably and unapologetically declared that the only one we needed was Tradition 3, and that protects me from being here and you from kicking me out, and I can break all the other traditions because I'm going to be here and you can't kick me out. And that was the only one I cared about. I mean, I would even post, I remember posting on social media, on Facebook, it was a meme of a hand like this, and it said, oh, am I breaking your tradition 11? Too bad, I'm protected by tradition 3. That's, yeah. When I did the steps with the sponsor I have now, today, by the time we got to Tradition 8, Alcoholics Anonymous was the first on my list. And Step 8, did I say Tradition 8? Step 8. Alcoholics Anonymous was the first on my Step 8 list. And the living amends to AA is what I'm doing here today. And so that's why I'm passionate about this stuff. So Tradition 4, I'll go back to Tradition 2. I'll give my example that I like to give is when you have a closed group. One of my very, very, very favorite groups, meetings to go to when I was new, was this women's group. And I didn't come in loving you guys like I do now. I love the fellowship today. I love the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not come in that way. I came in thinking I was better than you. I have friends. I don't need to be friends with a bunch of drunks. Thank you. And so I didn't want people knowing that I was in AA. So it was perfect for me to go to a closed meeting. I helped start this closed meeting that was a women's meeting because I did not want to be friends with a bunch of men. I've never been that kind of, newcomer in who says, well, I used to drink with the guys. I was the one who in the bars, I would be like, I'm sorry, but can you see that we're having a ladies' night? Bye. I was never that. I had no problem making friends with the women. So I was going to a women's group. It was closed, so I didn't need to break my anonymity or anything like that. And they let me bring my four-year-old daughter. And so it was perfect for me, right? Well, I took six months, something like that. I was celebrating some milestone, and my sponsor came with me to the meeting. She had never been to the meeting. And after the meeting, I'm like, so how, what'd you think? Did you like the meeting? And she says, well, yeah, no, it was a good meeting. I can see why you like it. But I thought they read in the script that it was a closed meeting. And I said, well, it is. And she goes, but you bring Taylor. And I said, well, yeah, that's why I like it. They let me bring Taylor. And she says, okay. So they're changing the definition of a closed meeting. And I said, well, no, group conscience. Okay. She said, we have 3 closed meetings in Central Oregon, like 103 open meetings. You can go to anywhere you want with your daughter, except for these 3 C's on our schedule, where a pediatrician or a school teacher or principal or whatever needs to go, that they don't run into a client or a patient or a student. And you're bringing your daughter to that meeting. And she says, I don't care what their group conscience is. It's not up to you to bring. So a custom would be, that this is either a closed meeting or it's an open meeting. But to redefine, like what he was talking about, the definition of a closed meeting, she was 4. I will never forget this. She starts going to school when she turned 5. And sure enough, the principal at her school, she knew from that meeting. The principal, she's a wonderful woman and she didn't care at all. But she should have the right to go to a meeting with a C in the schedule and not run into a student.